gonna take it anymore. I'll be right back.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for July 4th, 2013, coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, and here from the soon-to-be-overflowing GR headquarters in Houston, Texas, please welcome the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, have at it, Michael Williams.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, evening. It feels like afternoon.
I know. Yeah.
We have been spending the last, who knows how long, trying to get all the wires working. All right, now, so a little bit of editing here. I can't put to air what happened in the last couple of minutes here, so I just cut it out. Michael said it didn't matter, but it's a good chance for us to put an advertisement in for the new website. All of the people who want to subscribe to the new website will be able to hear the whole 2-3 hour show exactly the way we do it, raw and unexpurgated. Okay, back to Michael.
Goodness gracious.
You don't leave me lost for words very often, Williams, but when you do, you are a prince.
A prince of what is the question?
Well, that kind of works in with today's program, because we're going to be talking about the Defense of Marriage Act. We're going to be talking a whole bunch of things. In fact, we got a whole lot to get through today. So, in a packed program, I've been waiting to say that for a year now, Mike. So, today in a packed program, stay with us and we're going to have some fun. Mike, did you have an interesting week without going to the doctor?
No, my interesting week was going to the doctor again. Now, here we are on camera, and I don't know if you can tell or not by viewing me from the camera. I'm turning into a white boy. My red is being drained out of me. I've been bright red for about a decade now, and I've excused it. I've done everything. I've ignored it. For the better part of a decade, I looked like I've just come out of the tanning bed. So I'm in my second round this week of phlebotomy. It is the means by which they killed President George Washington. And
leeches, right?
Yeah, well, this they didn't have to use leeches, but the discovery of my iron and red cell count being astronomically high and it being caught just in time. So I'm going in every 2 weeks to donate blood, basically.
To have your blood let.
Yes. And the changes are just drastic. It is just fantastic. I recommend everybody go give your blood away. I recommend leeches to everyone. And I know a few also. But you know, I'm 60 years old, so that's when you start talking about your health on every conversation that you have. It's really funny to get me and Jeff on the phone with his surgery and my phlebotomies, and it's just like two old women on the phone talking. So.
I remember when I had my surgery. And now, Jeff's coming back to live with you.
Yes, he is coming back. And the two front rooms will be occupied by him.
He's a large lad, isn't he? Two rooms.
He takes up two rooms. So we're going to do this for as many months as it takes us to build up the ministry's income to where that we really need an office. I mean, we really, really, really need an office. We are touching the world, reaching out to try to reach a billion people during my lifespan, and here we are operating the headquarters out of two small bedrooms on the front end of my house. But you do what you got to do.
Gospel Revolution.
You know, being a Southern Baptist, you had certain things pounded in your head. And this new movement, that wasn't the way it was. And the way they were he was teaching, you know, it made you get your Bible and look and say, well, yeah, that's right. Why wasn't I taught that? Why was I taught this other thing? And then it was gradual because, like I said, I had this ingrained teaching that you know, that's the first thing your mind goes to is that Southern Baptist teaching of, well, what he's teaching can't be right until you get to reading the scriptures and realizing that most of the things that you were taught as a child was taking out of context and never finished the whole verse. They just took certain phrases and built on that instead of taking the whole three or four verses there together to get it all the right things out of it.
Hey, how did you enjoy Bob last week, mate? Was that good or what?
Oh, yeah. My goodness, I so appreciate Bob's book. And a lot of writing has been done over the last decade or so about the gospel that was just never in print before. There are several books now that are published, inspired by the gospel revolution. These folks have done their own research. Yeah, Bob was his knowledge about language and the gospel from such a learned position was really, really very delightful. And his turn of a phrase to express himself was fantastic. I enjoyed every bit of it.
We have some amazing people involved in this, Michael. We've got Wade Brewer. We're going to be hearing more from him. We've got Bob Hines. We've got Mel from over there in Georgia. We've just got a bunch of people. Jeff is no slouch when it comes to philosophy. And you, of course, you just seem to lay back and just wait for the revelations to hit you. Is revelations the right word now?
I don't know. I don't have a clue. I still believe that the Holy Ghost is the great teacher. I don't care whether it's for me or Bob Hines or you're going to have to edit this for sure. I totally forgot.
The other guys.
The brothers.
The bros, yeah.
The Esri brothers. You deliberately made me torture myself through that, didn't you?
I'll do it when it happens so seldom. I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it.
Oh yeah, right. It helped. Yeah, right. That was like beating a dog when he's down. That's what that was like.
Don't you, mate? Sometimes if it's the only chance you got, enjoy it.
Yes, believe me. Yes. Well, no, it's not the only chance you have. I always take opportunity to forget something, especially names. Now, the one thing that I really hope, I'm kind of glad this, I hope we put this to air because I want people to understand.
Which part do you want me to put to air? You've just told me I've got to edit it.
Well, the other part you got to edit. And that was what you said.
The part about.
Yes. The other part. The other part. Yes. So, it is really bizarre with names. I never stand up in front of an audience and say I want to thank so and 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 so, even though I know them very well. The moment I try to think of a name, I can come up with a real brain block for sure. So now that I can't remember and I can't talk, what in the world am I doing on this show?
Hey, how's the pledge drive going, mate?
It is going well, actually. We're up to just over $5,000 in one-time gifts. We are over $300 for our increase of monthly gifts. Oh, my. I cannot tell you what $300 more a month does to the budget. Oh, goodness. It is a breathing space that is really wonderful. We are in the process of turning a corner. I've been beating this drum for about 9 months now, ever since we were thrown into the position that we were after Richard's passing. And we are at that point now where we are rounding the bend. Last year was a tremendous year for the ministry in paying off all debt. Barris, we paid off over $40,000 worth of old debt last year. I'm just thrilled.
Old debt? Caused by
old debt that was caused by continuing to go preach and teach and travel and minister to churches that kicked me out and did not compensate me for it.
They asked you to come, and then they didn't pay you because they didn't feel they got there.
Yeah, they didn't like what I had to say. So.
So you went after they said, we'll give you so much, plus your plane fares and so forth and your hotel room.
I was invited to leave without a pay. You know, the way the guys did you there at the Baptist church, it's kind of like telling you, you know, we really love that you're a shaggy dog, but, you know, you better shave before you come back next week.
So, 40 grand. How long did it take us to clear that, mate?
Better part of 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was long. It was hard. I know that bankruptcy, it is in our legal system. It's for situations like that, that the courts will relieve you of debt that you cannot pay. And of course, my personal credit is what was on the line because my name is on everything. So if you wanted a bad credit score, all you had to do is look at mine. It was just ridiculous. But for me, there wasn't the option of declaring bankruptcy, which I could have, because all of this was on my name. But we didn't do that, but we did get past that. We did pay that debt. It is a sense of freedom that really is fantastic. And I'm very excited for the ministry, for the Gospel Revolution, because the more stable we are financially, the more, of course, we're able to reach out and help other people, to help other people. And that is my business model, if you will, for this ministry and the Gospel Revolution. Our reason for being financially stable and successful is so that we can reach out to help others to help others. It's not so that all of us can get wealthy and have a bigger home than the next home and the next home bigger than this home.
You don't want to help others?
No, I only want to help others because you're way too limited.
So you don't want to help others?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Because I don't like people.
Okay, this is going to be some kind of show. I can see it coming up now, mate.
Yes, no, the
it's a question of multiplication, really, isn't it?
It really is. I didn't come up with this business model out of the brilliance of my head. I just started observing what was happening, and I began to realize there are certain people who are inspired by the gospel, who find the power of the gospel to drop out of all connection to anything biblical, scriptural, anything whatsoever. It's as though they've been burned so bad that the gospel gives them the liberty to just exit stage right and say, I am out of here. Now, I'm happy for those folks. Then there are those folks who listen to this gospel revolution, who are constantly fed by what we do here on this program and by the CDs that are produced, and they're in a constant growing in the understanding of the gospel. Many of them run through my mind on a daily basis as to what they're doing and how they're doing. And then we have those also within that group are those who hear it and the only thing they can think about is how to share it with others. That group is the group that I want to stay closely tied to where that we can figure out what can we do to help you do what you do. I think it's just a very simple equation, actually. What we're doing is taking what we do and magnifying it tremendously by offering support to those who want to do what we're doing in the way that they do it best.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Gospel Revolution.
Calgary? You're going to Calgary?
Calgary, Alberta. And according to the reports I get, it did not all wash away. Our hearts do go out, though, to these folks in Calgary. They had a 100-year flood, as they are famously called. And this waterway that flooded over goes right through downtown Calgary and did cause quite a bit of damage, washed away a lot of homes north and especially south of town. But all the folks that I know of, anyway, I've not heard from everyone, but everyone who's heard from everyone there, I think they were all much on higher ground, and everyone's doing well. So Calgary, yes, coming up the 18th. We begin on Friday the 18th, and we have two sessions on Saturday, one in the afternoon and one at 7 o'clock in the evening on Saturday, one in the morning on Sunday.
It's Saturday, A, and Sunday, A.
Huh?
We have two sessions on Saturday, A.
Hey, oh, you just put the A in the wrong place.
What's the right place?
A is a question, eh? So if you were asking, we have one in the morning, eh? That would be correct. Otherwise, you're completely slaughtering Canadian language.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, all I know is in Queensland, all we say is, people say, what's the weather like? And they say, oh, bloody A.
Yes.
It's more like a period. It's like a full stop.
Yes.
So how's Aunt Martha? Oh, she died, eh?
Oh, now, see, that's the difference between an Australian A and a Canadian A.
The heretics.
Australian A's are a period, and Canadian A's are a question mark. See there? You are learning something very well. Why are you holding up baloney to me? Is that what you're telling me about my...
It's not baloney. It's not baloney. Only Americans would ever hold baloney in some kind of divine status. No, this is salami. You really don't forget... You do? For you, they're the same? Oh, really? Okay.
Ah and A are two different things.
Hey, so I was doing a whip around the web and I discovered that the Baptists just had their convention.
Well, good for the Baptists.
Yeah, that's what I say. The Baptists are pretty good. Did you know that only 6 years ago at the Baptist convention, they actually decided to say sorry for having upheld slavery as a basic biblical truth?
They're moving along at warp speed.
Warp speed. Those Baptists, can we possibly keep up with them? Anyway, now they're saying denominations are dying or transforming into something new, and we don't know what it is. And if they're only 160 years behind in the slavery question, God only knows what they're going to do about this one.
Well, the Baptists, they certainly have their researchers out there always gathering numbers. Their big dilemma was just a few years ago, the guy that they relied on the most to make all of their numbers work to where it looked like that everything was going the best, published a book saying Christianity's going down the tubes.
A Baptist?
Yes, the Baptists and the entire religious community relied on this guy. He was a statistician, and he always came up with these figures that made it look as though that, you know, everything's really comfy cozy, and then suddenly published a book and said, no, they aren't comfy cozy. But they had touted his name as the greatest name to do statistics and to draw conclusions from those statistics, and then suddenly he said, published a book that said, you're going down the tube. So
these guys are saying what George Barna has said for years. They're saying that it's we're coming into a small boat era. They're talking about the denominational structures being gone. The conference write-up that I read said, although the Nashville-based denomination claims 16 million members, it has seen membership decline for 6 years in a row. Recently, the convention has sought to expand its appeal beyond its traditional white southern base.
Epic things are happening within the Christian community and the issue of church and a church attendance and church membership. There is an epic shift that is in place. They always seem to be the very last to get the message. Everything within the church is changing. People are leaving there. Even in the advertisement of the trailer of my book, we bring out these facts. When you watch the trailer, onemikewilliams.com, if you watch that trailer, listen to it. Don't just listen to it, but look at the little captions in the bottom of it, because we are giving you reference to where we found these facts, where these things are quoted. So these aren't things we just pulled out of the air. These were well-researched. And this decline has been there for quite some time. And the shift in people's opinions, the issue of gay marriage, regardless of what anybody thinks about it, fact is that the majority of Americans now have completely switched in a very short time to favoring gay marriage.
Incredibly short. In fact, this reminds me, and I know that conservatives will call me out and they will dispute this. This reminds me so much of the way that the Berlin Wall fell, the communism fell.
Mm-hmm. That pattern has continued in this century. Things changed as to how change takes place.
Change itself changed.
Absolutely. And the speed of change changed. So where once we had an agrarian society for centuries, then we had the industrial age for many decades. Now we have the technical age for just a few years. The rate of change has changed. Where once children died with the songs of their cradle on their lips, now people die without even knowing the songs of the previous generation. There is a total disconnect, it seems, between generations.
Mike, the Defense of Marriage Act just crumbled. It was like, it was like, hello, what is God spitting out rainbows?
Yeah, somebody sent me a clip. And it was a prayer, and I think it was St. Peter kind of monitoring the prayers, and he said, the evangelicals are calling for lightning strikes upon the Supreme Court today. And God responds and says, I'm sorry, you'll have to reply to them. I have nothing but rainbows today. So it was a good little cartoon. My issue with all of this, and of course, I really don't like getting into issues about issues, but this is a gospel issue. I know it sounds strange to people sometimes. Mike Williams will say that water baptism is not a gospel issue, and then turn around and say the Supreme Court striking down DOMA is a gospel issue. But the extension of the fact that we are one and the propagation of what the Founding Fathers, and yes, I know that the Founding Fathers never dreamed of this being part of it, but still, that all men are created equal is in our Constitution, and it is being played out in a very powerful way. So anytime that something is passed or stricken down as a law that establishes equality in our society, that's a gospel issue, and the gospel is being very powerfully effective. We've got to have a way of thinking in place for this new world that we have on our hands. And I really do believe the gospel is the only way to make sense of this in the hearts and minds of people. Over the years, as I've shared the gospel, the issue of homosexuality has not been an issue in any of my teaching. You can listen to all of the Book of Romans. There may be a reference in there, especially at the first, where I'm defining Paul's teaching about Romans chapter 1, which is always used against the gay community. And I put that in a context of, I let Paul put that in context, actually, where Paul himself compared the issue of, this is the facts, honestly, folks, come on, we all know that it is unnatural and therefore ungodly for a man to lie with a man. It's just not the natural way. It's not natural. And a woman to lie with a woman, it's just not natural, therefore ungodly. And within just a few sentences afterwards saying, oh, yes, and what about the issue of circumcision? Which one is natural and which is not by nature? So this tremendous comparative teaching where actually Paul was advocating the equality of the gay community, that if you can validate your spirituality by an unnatural act, you certainly can't condemn someone because of an act that is against nature. It's just the logic of that just breaks down. So this striking down of this, I'm not wanting to get married. As far as personally, I really don't have a personal private interest other than the issue of equality. And I think any time that equality is being denied, that is not a good thing for our country. So I'm happy for America, really.
Obama calls religious education divisive.
You know, it's very interesting when you look at religious education and the history of it. The University of Virginia was the very first university established in the world as a non-religious institution. Thomas Jefferson established the University of Virginia, and he watched from his mountain home at Monticello the construction of the University of Virginia down in the valley below him. And this was the very first education on planet Earth offered without any religious influence. So I agree. If you look at what religious education did before that time, you have to say that in many levels, it was very devastating.
But wouldn't you have to say that? Wouldn't you have to also say that about most other universities made a since then, like, for example, Harvard and Yale and Brigham Young, they were all based, they were all founded by religious methods, weren't they?
We still have those. Thank goodness that we have access to education without that. And the even those that are just like Oral Roberts University. I mean, you can go to Oral Roberts University now and get a complete education in a very high academic way without ever participating in their religious part of their school, even though it is based on and derived from these religions. They know that they cannot require religious education to go along with their selected subjects of the people who participate there. There are atheists who go to ORU.
Do they teach evolution there?
I really don't know if they teach evolution or not. I would say there's probably subjects that they choose not to teach on.
Bishop Yardbird. Hey, did you hear about this bird? Bishop Yardbird?
Bonehead of the day.
Bishop Yardbird. No. Yeah. Drop it on me.
Okay.
A prominent Houston pastor is now apologizing to those who believe he went too far. That bishop asked members of his church for money to replace the blades on the church's helicopter. Isaiah Carey went in the community and online to gauge the public's reaction on this. So what did you find?
Melinda, I found most people are scared to death to give their opinion on camera when it comes to talking about a prominent minister. I also found there are some in the community so dedicated to the church that they attack those who even try to report it.
Prayer is so important. God doesn't want you to miss it. But most people do miss it, unfortunately, especially when it comes to this believing area.
There is no question Bishop I.V. Hilliard has built a religious empire at New Light Church in Houston. There are thousands of members with six locations, including one in Austin. This is a controversy that's sparking heated debates on social media. It's a newsletter from Bishop Hilliard sent to some members of New Light. It tells a flock the church would like to raise $50,000 to replace the blades on the church's helicopter. The letter goes on to tell those who donate $52 each will receive a blessing from God. The letter from Hilliard indicates if you donate, they could receive the transportation mode or vehicle of their choice from God. That blessing would arrive in either 52 days or 52 weeks.
That this is the confidence we have in Him if we ask anything according to His will. So if I pray according to His will, then He hears me.
New Light responded to our request for a comment on this matter, and they issued this statement from Bishop Hilliard. It reads, New Light Church regularly make appeals to special partners, members, and friends of the church for the support of various programs and services. In this instance, the appeal was directed to our special partners and friends who are familiar with the biblical principles upon which we base our faith. We sincerely regret if anyone was offended by this appeal, in that it was not our intent, and it was signed by Bishop Hilliard. MyFoxHouston.com. Melinda.
Isaiah Carey, thank you. Severe.
Well, Bishop Hilliard.
It's Bishop Yardbird, I thought. Oh, Hilliard. Yep, you're right. Sorry.
Yeah, this is Bishop Hilliard. I actually have a bit of familiarity with this bishop. Most of you remember Ray Harris, who we got established in the gospel and sent him off on his way to college up in the Northwest. Life was transformed by the gospel completely. His home church was Bishop Hilliard. He went to church there every Sunday. And his mother was a very strong advocate of the bishop and the church. And when I first began to speak to Ray about the gospel, of course, his comparisons of the gospel was to the doctrines of Bishop Hilliard.
Yardbird.
Huh?
Yardbird. Bishop Yardbird.
Why are you saying Yardbird?
Okay, I quit. Aren't you glad we edit this?
I know you got something going there, but I'm just not on.
Well, anyone that promises that God's going to give you your own transport if you give $50 towards, I reckon he's a yard bird. I mean, that's all I'm saying.
Okay. I am way too slow for you to do things like that to me at all. You just can't do that. So, Bishop Flamingo.
Now you're forcing me to say it. For all of our Aussie friends and English friends and anyone who's not in the South, here in Tennessee, if somebody out in the country has a few chickens in their backyard, they're called yard birds. That's what they're called, yard birds.
No, you've even got that all wrong.
Oh.
A yard bird is a plastic bird you stick in the ground in the front yard.
See, they are so ignorant they don't know what they call them anymore.
Yes, they are, aren't they? So, to watch the transformation in the thinking of this young man over 4 months that he was fed the gospel continually was really quite amazing. And it was in a direct reflection to this pastor who is telling people, you know, give $50 to repair my rotors on my helicopter and God will give you the car of your choice. Bishop Hilliard, let me go on record as saying you are a complete fake and phony. And I know what you did to this young man's life. I know what your doctrines did. And you're a fake. I have no qualms about this whatsoever. To go to such extremes of deception and manipulation and control over precious people's lives, there is no shame that could be shoveled on you that would be worthy of this detestable act.
52 days or 52 weeks, because God isn't real good with timing, but he is very good with his word.
Mm-hmm. And once we get past 52 weeks, he'll say, well, maybe it was 52 years. This is detestable. You know, I'm glad that we can review it and laugh about it. But you got to realize there were thousands of people affected by this one man who deceived these people, and he knows it's manipulation and deception. I just cannot believe he is so ignorant that he doesn't know that he is a liar.
It's hard to believe that following the calf path, or as you would say, the calf path, that cow path that has been trodden into culture, tradition upon tradition, year upon year, generation upon generation, it's difficult to believe that people can be so adept at following that without ever thinking for themselves.
Really is, and this is the seizing of the brain. It's being seized by the religious community, this taking away of the freedom to think for yourself, this God-given right, I think, from the time that we come into this planet. See, before somebody can get up and tell you, if you give $50 to replace the blades on my helicopter, God is going to give you a car of your choice. Well, who's not going to choose a Rolls Royce, you know? God's going to give you the car of your choice within any period of time. You see, there has to be a lifelong abuse there. You have to have been locked up and trained and beaten, so to speak, and whipped into shape before that you would not sit there and, when that statement come out of his mouth, not rise up in absolute disgust and call him out on it at the moment. You have to have had your ability to think completely taken away to bring any justification to such a statement coming out of any man's mouth. Whether it bishop, pastor, pope, next door neighbor, or anything else, so this is a real tragedy. You know, I get the levity of it. But this really does mark the real and true damage that has been done to people's lives. It is just utterly amazing. And if God can take $50 and turn that into a Rolls Royce, Why doesn't Pastor Hilliard go around buying new cars for everybody in his congregation so that he can give him the helicopter of his choice? I don't understand. I just totally don't understand why that Bishop Hilliard's wisdom works for the people, but it don't work for him.
Lies are nice, lies are nice. Every Sunday you cheat me. Far too smart to have a heart. You look happy to please me. Religion so faint you can smell the scent of your fermenting prowcrack. Your dogma sucks, and that's the crux of my contempt for your guilt trap. Our religion is better than yours, and we have more cash to prove it. We the sheeple, we love our steeple, and logic will never remove it. Our pastor perfectly hears from God, and he said you were sinful. Fact that we make no sense at all proves that we're the Lord's people. Files and corporate fraud, the greatest show on earth. Name it and claim it and then shift the blame. It is how you screwed me, Prince Bert. Your honey pot is so baited so well with guilt and hell forever. Heaven is nice for a price and disagreeing never. Let me tell you now, the best thing you will hear ever. We are one through the sun, judgment's done with forever. Your good news gospel say gays go to hell with Arabs and atheists and Democrats all, plus 90% of the world's population. Your God is not very successful. My daddy's a priest in the Vatican. My sister sells freedom from sin. My mommy sells prophetic words from the Lord. And my, how the money rolls in. Rolls in, rolls in. Oh my, how the money rolls in, rolls in. Rolls in, rolls in. Oh my, how the money rolls in. It rolls in, rolls in, rolls. Everybody now, my, how the money rolls in. It rolls in, yeah, oh, rolls in, rolls in.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, Michael, I got a clip of Pat Robertson, our dear friend Pat Robertson, and I got a clip of his concept of forgiveness, and I want to run it by you and just see what you think of this, mate. Here he is.
Well, sure, your relationship with God will be hindered if you've got anger in your heart. If you haven't forgiven your brother, then God's not going to forgive you, is what the Bible says. Of course, he forgives you, but in the same time, you have broken the covenant with him that gives you access into power.
Pat. You know, I shared the platform with Pat Robertson while he was running for president, which at the time was a great honor for me. he and I sat in the green room before the service, and all of the media was there, and I was speaking at the church that day, but time had been afforded for Pat to come and campaign here at this church in Rockford, Illinois. So we spent some time back there, and there's been a couple other times that I've had a couple of moments with Pat in private. Yeah, this... Pat! My goodness. You know, there is Yardbird religion, but this goes beyond that. This is what the birds left in the yard after they went through. This is terrible. Oh, my gosh. Now, the saying that if you don't forgive, God won't forgive you is like ignoring the cross. And saying that you broke your covenant with God by not forgiving and have negated your covenant with God. What's Jesus for?
Did you hear him stuttering? He's trying to answer, and he says, "Yes, yes, you'll be, but well, you won't be forgiven. Well, you will be forgiven, but no, you won't." I mean, talk about stuttering his way through.
Oh my gosh! After all these years, goodness gracious, to have no acknowledgement of that answer had no acknowledgement that there was a cross ever took place. There was nothing about Jesus in that. That's you and God. That's God. That what you heard is a relationship with God without Christ. That's what that was. Paul taught on this after the resurrection, and he thought that forgiveness was a good idea too. And he said that you and I should forgive even as our Father which is in heaven has forgiven us, even as we have been forgiven. So. We don't forgive to be forgiven. That was old covenant. That was another impossibility of the list of impossibilities for humans to do to make a covenant work. This would be like numeral uno. You must forgive to be able to have God forgive you.
Jesus died for every sin except not forgiving someone.
Yeah, so, you know, and you've got to come up with the ability to do what God can't do. God can't forgive you. You must forgive first. So who's God in this relationship?
Oh, so, Mike, that is great. That is so good. And, you know, family, the only reason that we even air Pat Robertson here is because he's Jeff Robertson's cousin, and we want to give him due deference. Now,
and Pat needs aired out anyway. So.
He needs. Well, at his age, mate, anything needs aired out. So, we got one thing to say. We ain't going to take it no more.
No, absolutely not. Oh, my gosh. I'll be right back.
In fact, we call it Welcome to Pigeon Religion. Really, it's for the birds.
Well, don't you know about the bird? Well, everybody knows that the bird is the word. Well, a bird, bird, the bird's the word. Well, a...
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Gospel Revolution.
Now, the question for the PowerCast this week comes from Moses Michael, and I only got half the question, so I'm going to have to guess the other half. It says, in developing on the issues of oneness, I can see this. To say that Christ lives in me is not true, because it pictures two, not one. Oneness also brought to an end the famous term, Amen. Now, I got to explain something. I only got half the email. And I think Mike did too. And that imam, yes, could be Eminem. It could be Imam. or it could be, I reckon. I'm going to finish it the way I think that Moses meant it. One that's also brought to an end the famous term Emmanuel, God with us.
Mm-hmm. First off, the gospel is not oneness. The gospel is one. We are one. Oneness is a pursuit that is being made by religions, and even those that call themselves not religions, they are pursuing oneness.
When we use the term oneness, what we're saying is, I'm one with you in this aspect or in that aspect, but we don't mean that we are one in substance. We mean that we're one in mindset, perhaps. But as far as God is concerned, we're actually one.
Oneness is an experience, and one is a state of being. I have my McDonald's cup here, and I pick up my cup, and I take a sip, and I am experiencing oneness.
What happens when that coffee gets into you?
We become one, at least for a little while.
Okay.
We become one. You can't tell the difference, that's for sure. At least for the time being, you can't tell the difference. The term one and oneness, they're just two different things altogether. So thank you, Moses, for drawing our attention to the term oneness. The gospel does not teach oneness. The gospel teaches one. As to your question, Christ being in us would come up with two if we didn't have the alternate true also. Christ is in us. We are in Christ. When we experience this equation, bringing both terms into play, the two are one. Christ in us, us in Christ. So it is not a contradiction to say that we are in Christ or Christ is in us, being contradictory to being one. If only one of those were a part of this, yes, I could see a problem with that. But by having both equal, then it does come up with just one. Pertaining to the very last part of your letter, Moses, that the term God with us is not true because we are now one. And based on the answer to the first part of the question, you might find my response to this a bit odd, but once you think through it, I think it will be a clear thought. And that is, I agree with this. I agree that Emmanuel, God with us, is no longer in effect. God with us was the name Emmanuel for Christ to be born into the earth. That was God born into the earth. But God is no longer with us. Something much more powerful has happened. A cross took place. And God with us lived with us for 33 years, and God with us then moved in us. At that point, we became one. So yes, to the last part of your statement and question, Moses, it would be true that God with us, Emmanuel, is no longer valid for today.
What I'm hearing you say in different words, Michael, is Jesus Christ was our prototype. As the Greek says, he was the first goer. I think Hebrews in the King James, it says, he was the captain of our salvation. There is no paradox. There is no paradox of how can Jesus be fully God and fully man. He wasn't fully God and fully man. He was a new creation incorporating God and man. Is that what you're saying, Mike?
If the term captain means prototype, the connotation of that is so powerful it escapes the reality that we have been trained under Christianity altogether. If a prototype was our salvation, then the only salvation that we can have is God and man becoming one. That is our salvation. And to deny that is to deny salvation. If Jesus was the prototype of our salvation, this is what our salvation is going to look like. It's going to be God and man being one. All are one in Christ.
The Greek word used there actually, Michael, is archegos. It's derived from two different words. One means to lead or to go, and the other one means the first or the chief. We don't see it much in the New Testament. We see it only four times actually in the New Testament, where it's the prince and the author of our salvation, the captain of our salvation. But we see it a lot in classical Greek, Euripides, Plato, and scattered all the way through the Septuagint version, the Greek version of the Old Testament that was translated by Jewish scholars. We see in 1 Maccabees, we see in the Apocrypha, we see Clement of Rome, who wrote to the Corinthians, that would have been the very late part of the first century. He used it quite a bit. Irenaeus, one of the church fathers, he used it quite a bit. But we see it more outside of the Bible than we do inside the Bible. But it's no question that it means one that takes the lead in anything. One who is at the prominence, who far surpasses the examples of faith that are used elsewhere. Now, the real picture of using that word prince comes from the pre-gunpowder days when the leader would lead into battle. The last time that happened was in 1936, I think, with Haile Selassie I of Ethiopia. But it used to be the norm. Now the leaders, of course, lead from behind, since gunpowder means that the people in the front row are always going to die. But that's the picture past, or the history of the etymology, I guess, of this word. And so this guy was in front. He was the author. He was the leader. He was, well, actually, as Paul says in Hebrews, looking unto Jesus, the archegos and finisher of faith, the prototype or the author, as it says there, of faith. And again, of course, in Hebrews, it calls him the captain of our salvation in Hebrews 2.
Yeah, that's also powerful. I love it. Thank you so much for pointing that out to me, Barris. I love learning from you. It's always such a delight.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even your neighborhood bar. You can listen with your whole family.
James Forehand from down near Dallas sent in a message this week. Here it is.
Hi, Mike and Barris. This is James Forehand in Hickory Creek, Texas. I just finished listening to the webcast about the power of our oneness with God and everyone else, for that matter. Barris read from Ephesians about the middle wall of partition that has been broken down and made us one with God and all mankind. You also talked about the conflict of being one with nature, because we many times need to protect ourselves from it, which creates a division with nature. Is not the nature of oneness the absence of conflict? Is there not a conflict with humanity on our part, in that sometimes we have to protect ourselves from people that would do us harm, even to the point of killing them? I really appreciate you guys causing us to think. Even though it's hard on a brain like mine, it takes me seemingly years to get new information to sink in. If nothing else, hopefully it'll keep me from Alzheimer's, which actually runs in my family. Again, thank you guys. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Mike, what do you think of that?
James, thank you so much for sending in your comments about our last show. And again, I don't want to hound on this too much, but we really are wanting to help people understand the difference between oneness and one. And it is true, the absence of division is the absence of hostility. Now, that is so well demonstrated at the cross that the absence of division is now the absence of hostility between God and man. Now, this hostility that we have between each other is not because there is a division. It's because we have a lack of understanding of the fact that this division is gone. Therefore, we create the hostility to the point of having to kill each other. As Paul said, war now comes from within, and it comes from within because of a lack of understanding. When we are talking about the conflict with nature and having to protect ourselves from nature, that's never going to change. Nature can't change its mind, but people can have a change of mind. And James, let me say, you have learned this gospel way quicker than I have, so don't put yourself too far down the totem pole. It has taken me 30 years to learn this gospel. Everybody I know has learned the gospel faster than me.
Gospel Revolutionaries, if you would like to leave us a message of any kind, if it's a question, it might be a comment, you might want to tell us how good-looking we are or how silly we sound, doesn't matter, call us on USA area code 234-564-0971. That is 234-564-0971. And please, let us have your comments, let us have all your questions. We love putting them to air. So I'm going to be looking forward to checking my messages and seeing what you have to say. Now, talking about James Forehand, he wrote you, and I'm going to take a liberty, James, and I'm going to read this out. He wrote, this may be one of those questions that is just not answerable, but here goes anyway. I was talking to my middle son, Tim, on Father's Day, and we were having a good time just talking about a number of subjects. Tim is a really great guy. He has terminal cancer, but is dealing with it heroically, so I am proud of him. He was raised in a strong Christian home. He made profession of faith at 6, was baptized, and as a teenager, was in training to go into the ministry as a youth minister. He was the publisher of Corpus Christi's Christian newspaper, but as many Christians, he began to doubt the Christian teachings and eventually ceased all his Christian activity. When I began to embrace the true gospel and shared it with him, he felt that it made more sense than Christianity, but was not really ready to embrace it as his dad had. As we talked on Father's Day, I asked him where he was in a spiritual sense. He said, Dad, I'm still having a problem with God, and this is his problem, and this is my question. Since God knows everything, why did he let such extreme suffering come into the world? Yes, it looked like he had a plan, but why did/does so much suffering have to be a part of his plan? He told me that he does believe in God, he just does not know what to believe about him. I realize it's one of those why questions. I wanted so much to be able to answer his question, but all I could say was that many times the why just can't be answered. If there is anything you guys can add to that, I'd appreciate it. I heard you guys say on the webcast that you really want people to think for themselves. Tim is doing that. James Forehand, Hickory Creek. Mike, what do you say, mate?
Well, let me go to a couple of levels on this. The power of this gospel is not wrapped up in what I think about God, but what God thinks about me. Tim, through his practice, and as you could see, was very dedicated, very committed in his heart to what he was told was the truth. James and I have had several conversations about Tim, and the one thing that I recognize about Tim is honesty. I've never met Tim personally, but everything that I have learned about him tells me that to move forward, he falls back on just being honest about himself and about what he thinks, as you see in this letter, in this conversation that took place between a very loving father with a very honest son. And here they are having this conversation, Tim is in a terminal situation right now. Doctors have told him they have completely exhausted all of their efforts to save his life, and this is just an issue of time now. This is the nightmare that any family would have to face. He has small children. This family is very close. So here we have this very earnest and open young man who is facing the end of his life at the time when all he wants to do is live. So my first point is that the thing that brings me peace of mind is I don't try to understand God. I do try to understand the gospel, but I don't try to understand God. I try not to have an opinion of God because it is his opinion of me that brings my mind at peace with this world. The other thing that I would say is that suffering is not a part of the plan of God. The plan has been fulfilled. The plan is freedom. And within that realm of freedom, we have the ability to affect suffering in this planet. This puts us in the position of drawing on all of the creativity that we have within us individually and collectively to begin to address the suffering of this world. We are the ones now that if suffering is going to end on this earth, we must stop looking at it as a plan of God and look at suffering as something we can do something about. God has made himself one with us. He is a part of the suffering, but in the aspect that God individually, separate from man, is going to do something about the suffering, we know just by history that just isn't going to happen. We have been given freedom. Freedom, 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 freedom. Now, let's do as much as is possible, which we find out every day we can do more than we think that is possible to end the suffering of the human race. And we're doing a better job at it all the time. I could only wish, for the sake of this precious family, that we were more advanced than what we are about ending the suffering of cancer. I know that those words are not terribly comforting, but the one thing that I do know is that truth is the most comforting thing that we can have anytime, regardless of where we are.
I'm reminded, Michael, of the fact that when people say to me, why does God let this happen on earth? I say, God doesn't, you do.
Yes.
That works for why kids in Africa are starving to death. It doesn't really work for why people in America dying of cancer. However, we are free to do whatever we want. God in us, we, the God us, discovering ways of curing things, which once were the bane. With polio, who was the person? Was it Salk? Dr. Salk, who invented the polio vaccine?
Yes, I believe that's correct.
A man. Just a man. I don't even know if he was a Christian. Now, I know that religious people like to say that most of modern scientific breakthroughs have been made by people in their religion. For example, Christians often point to Isaac Newton and other people like him, Louis Pasteur and so forth, Joan of Arc, and claim that the fact that they were Christians gave them a creative edge. But I just invite you to look with me, Mike, at some of the greatest inventions that we have had in humanity, and they all came from non-Christian. In fact, they all came from non-Judeo-Christian backgrounds. From the Muslim world, we have coffee, chess. They invented the parachute, can you believe it? Shampoo, metal armor, some forms of surgery, the concept of the torpedo, the concept of the windmill. These are all Islamic inventions. And actually, as you look at numbers 1 through 9, our modern arithmetic numbering system, it's Arabic writing. The Arabs are the people who discovered so many inventions, it's not funny. What about Chinese? Paper, gunpowder, printing, both woodblock and movable type printing. Things which we still use to this day. What about India, another non-Christian country? Invented the cotton gin, invented buttons to keep your shirt together. Diamonds were first mined by Indians. When I was a kid, we used to call it Indian ink, because ink was an Indian invention. It has been claimed that Christianity was the major factor in the move from medieval darkness, or Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, if you like, through to scientific breakthroughs of later scientists like Isaac Newton. But they couldn't have done it without paper and ink, both of which were invented by Chinese and Indians. They couldn't have done it without mathematics, which was done by the Arabs. When you really stop and think about it, mankind is incredibly creative, with or without his religious bias.
And that list is endless, Barris.
It's endless.
Yes, it is endless. And on every level in the human race, whether it is political, whether it is mental, emotional, spousal, virtually every disease on planet Earth has been affected, and some completely eradicated off the face of the Earth. I call that healing. I call that the power of God. It may have happened through somebody who's an atheist. I can't help that he's an atheist, but I also can't help the fact that he and God are one. We're looking for miracles in the churches, while miracles, if you will, are taking place constantly around us all of the time. But it is coming from the ingenuity that is within man, which that's where God is.
Spread the religion of the rhythm of life.
All around the world, more and more people have stopped going to church. In the United States alone,
almost 3 million walk out of church every year and never go back. Could it be the conflicting message of a loving God that will torture many in a place called hell was just a little too much? Could it be that the gospel is good news for everyone, the whole world, and not just good news for few and bad news for most? Could it be that there is no division of people, some sinners, some saints? The number one reason people gave for leaving church was they did not believe their pastors were telling them the gospel truth. And they were right. If the gospel truth is not good news for everyone, it's not good news for anyone. 1. The Gospel According to Mike by Mike Williams. Available at bookstores, Amazon.com, and other fine retailers.
1 is now available as an ebook at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com for a limited time only, at the introductory price of just $3.99. Available also in hardback and paperback.
The treasure in these vessels made of earth, waiting for Christ, who is our life, to be realized.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We really appreciate all of you gospel revolutionaries, our bona fide producers who, by your financial support, ensure that this weekly PowerCast always goes out on time. If, well, actually, you don't. It's Jeffrey and me, and it's really, well, anyway.
Are you trying to say something, Bear?
Shut up, son. Not too much. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 352-569-4889 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, if you're in North America, simply telephone us at 234-564-0789. Jeffrey, I can't do this properly. 234-564-0971. If you're from outside of America, it makes a lot more sense. It goes 1-2-3-4-5-6-4-0-9-7-1. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we're always open for a Facebook meetup at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Remember, no religionists were harmed in the making of this program, and thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, and from somewhere deep in the heart of Texas.
This is Michael Williams. Saying thanks, everybody. Goodness gracious, it's always so much fun. Thank you, Beres, for all that you do. We can't do without you. This is always a really fun time for me. I really enjoy the time that it takes us to record this. And then what Beres makes out of it becomes a little piece of magic. So thank you very much, my friend, for all that you do. And thank you, everybody, for listening in. Do send us your questions. As you see, it can spur a lot of thought and a lot of interesting conversation. So participate. You must participate in your own recovery.
You must participate. You must participate. That's right. Call us on 234-564-0971. Leave a message. Leave a question. Please let us have your questions, and remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, only better.
Gospel Revolution.